SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number two, live right here on this Monday on the Early Line. The opening half hour of this second hour, a full recap from the Saturday slate in week number five around college football, including the game of the year up until this point, and maybe the game of the year already in Alabama between the Crimson Tide and Georgia. We'll reset the rest of the weekend as well. And then to end out this second hour, in hour two, it's two Monday night football games for the second straight week. A doubleheader of Monday night football. Can the Titans get their first win of the year? 0-3 against Snoop Huntley in the Miami Dolphins. And what are we going to see tonight between the Detroit Lions at home in the Motor City and one of the other remaining unbeaten teams, at least through 3 weeks, the Seattle Seahawks? All of that, DRS, in this second hour. We'll talk some Major League Baseball as well. There is plenty to get through here, still remaining up until 11 a.m. Eastern on the Early Line.
And it's good we have a doubleheader tonight because we might get a clunker to start the night down in Miami, but we might have a really good one in Detroit with the Seahawks game. So you might have the best of both worlds. But can I say something, Ben? We're going to talk in a little bit about Georgia and Alabama, something that's always gotten on my nerves. And if I, when I played college football and when I was in high school, I don't understand this, Ben. There is not a single person on that team that I wore number 13 my whole career that would ever be allowed to say, hey, you know what? I want 13 too. Let's both be 13. Like watching the Alabama game, Ryan Williams is the flat out superstar. He's number two. Yeah. You know, he intercepted the ball late in the game. Oh, it was Ryan Williams. Man, he plays defense too. Like he's not Travis Hunter out there. Another number two came down with the interception. How is that possible? Like if you're a good player, nobody should ever wear your jersey number in the same game as you. How could you let that happen? That's legacy, man. Especially walking around campus. Hey, number two with the interception. Like, oh man, like these girls over here and these, you know, these guys over here talking about this other number two. I'm the real number two, not that number two over here. I mean, come on now. You can't wear the same number. How does that happen? I would never allow that to happen for me.
You would never allow that, but it is allowed by the regulations. And how about Xavier Brown making the game-sealing interception? Number two is big in Alabama and a true freshman to boot, not 17 years old like Ryan Williams. So let's go right in to the game of the year, Saturday night under the lights inside Bryant Denny Stadium in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. DRS, I often say this when we hype up any type of sporting event. You set expectations for things and life, and rarely do they live up to those lofty standards. Saturday night, between then number four Alabama and then number two Georgia, it exceeded expectation, at least in the third quarter and, of course, into the fourth and final. Because early, it was like, oh, boy, Georgia's got a lot of questions to answer, and Alabama might be the best team in the country. I still think there might be some of that outstanding. But Alabama wins the game of the year through the opening month of this season in what might still be the game of the year when the season comes to a close. 41-34, outright as a short 1.5-point underdog, which was a story in itself in Tuscaloosa. Total of 50.5 comes nowhere close. It screams over. But Donnie, to truly set the stage for this game, Alabama scored a touchdown on each of its first four offensive possessions. Georgia's defense had zero answer for Jalen Milroe and all that he could do. The Crimson Tide, after a safety, led 30-7 at the break. But then UGA started its rally. They scored on three straight possessions after entering the fourth quarter trailing 33-14, including, with just over 2.5 minutes remaining, a 67-yard touchdown pass from Carson Beck to Dylan Bell. Georgia takes a lead after a failed two-point conversion. On the next play from scrimmage, there was the freshman, Ryan Williams. One play, 75 yards, ballerina pirouette spinning moves down the sideline to avoid the Georgia defense. Alabama takes the lead. Alabama takes a victory and a huge one, 41-34 at home over the Dogs.
You just take a look, you know, the SEC, it just means more, right? And it's been that way for 20 years. Like, LSU, you know, has an unbelievable home field advantage, and a lot of other schools, Clemson, like, you know, even Hard Rock Stadium at night when it's a packed environment, it's a lot of fun.
Come on.
But didn't it just feel bigger? That Saturday night, pretty cute. Miami, when they get that place rocking 75,000, that's one of the best.
Give me a break.
What are you going to say, Texas
A&M?
And a bunch of guys in some... The little overalls that they wear out there.
Yeah, I agree. Kyle Field's weird, no doubt about it. Yeah, that's pretty good leader, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a little bit zesty out of you. Go ahead. But you're not going to compare Hard Rock Stadium, even at its peak, to what we saw in Tuscaloosa on Saturday. Go ahead.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there are big atmospheres around college football, but nothing is bigger than Alabama football. There's nothing. Like, that game day environment seems absolutely out of control, and it's always been that way. And they were the innovator of the touchdown celebration to turn the lights off. They've been doing that for a long time now, and a lot of other schools had followed through. Yeah. That was such a fun game to watch start to finish there when you know the bigness of that environment. But you know what I was getting a kick out of in that game? They kept showing Nick Saban early in that game. And you know he loves Alabama, but I'm telling you right now, the competitor in him was sitting there going like, is this guy really going to blow Georgia out by 40 points in his first look at home? Like, are they going to forget about me in 2 to 3 years? Are they going to knock my statue down and just build a bigger one with Kalen DeBoer next to me after 10 to 15 years? It was that much fun, but you also got to credit this. Kirby Smart's a really good coach. They could have rolled over and got smoked by 50, and they had the lead late in that fourth quarter. And if you want to talk about the tale of two halves, how about the tale of two quarterbacks? Carson Beck, I honestly thought, Ben, he might have been concussed in the first half because he was terrible with every throw, didn't see anything, and all of a sudden woke up out of the cobwebs in the second half and was throwing laser beams all over the field. So a wild game all the way through, unbelievable atmosphere, so much fun to watch it play out. Alabama was the better team. They deserved to win, but my goodness, they almost lost that football game. Inconceivable the way they crushed Georgia in the first half.
439 yards for Beck, 3 touchdown tosses, but 3 interceptions, including that game-sealing pick from number 2 and the freshman defensively, Xavien Brown. But Jalen Milroe is now our Heisman Trophy favorite. His statistical output this year is incredible. 4 consecutive games, DRS, of multiple touchdown tosses, multiple rushing scores. He was the Crimson Tide's leading rusher on Saturday night. 117 yards and 2 touchdowns. Alabama allowed 49 sacks, a program record in a bad way a season ago. They gave up 0 against Georgia on Saturday night. The offensive line improvement under Kalen DeBoer has been exceptional. And speaking of Kalen DeBoer, with the outright win over Georgia on Saturday, his record as an FBS head coach since the start of 2021, his second year at Fresno State against ranked foes, 13-2. It is the best win percentage in college football, moving past now the guy he handed the L to, Kirby Smart, who is 17-3 in that span at Georgia. Kalen DeBoer is a winner. You joke about Nick Saban. I understand. But there might be a thought to spray paint over Nick Saban Field after what DeBoer pulled off, closing out a win on Saturday night. But Donnie, I'm going to allow you the final minute here, and it's one thing we discussed, hyping up this game. The beautiful thing of the 12-team college football playoff era is we got the game of the year, and it was significant, and it mattered, and the atmosphere deserved the game that we got. But the great thing is we might see both of these teams get an opportunity still to contend for a national championship, and in my mind, that is significant in college football.
Exactly. I feel like my voice is taking over college football. I told everybody how exciting this season was going to be, how electric it's going to be. And look, this is only halfway there. We're 2-3 years away from taking away the bowl season altogether. And then you want to talk about college football and a 32-team playoff? Let's not get that's ahead of ourselves just now, because that's coming it's down the line. But hear me out on this. The fact of the matter is this. Two of the best football teams played in September. What a crime it would be if one of those football teams wasn't able to really compete the rest of the season because they had one loss. That was the insanity of college football. Now we have the 12-team playoff, and it's glorious, and it's only September. Love it.
I opened the door for you, but that was the good point we needed. More on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
College football scores from Saturday in a huge upset in SEC territory to start in Oxford, in the Grove, as more than a 2-touchdown favorite lay in 15.5. Ole Miss was one of the most impressive teams to start off the season. One of three teams that entered Saturday, a perfect 4-0, not only straight up, but against the spread, booked as a favorite in all four games. We thought they were going to roll Kentucky. The Wildcats had other ideas, playing spoiler early on to end out the final Saturday in September, 20-17. Kentucky as a favorite, DRS, in its SEC opener against South Carolina, lost by more than 3 touchdowns. As an underdog, they played Georgia to a point at home, covering as more than a 3-touchdown dog. They win outright as a 15.5-point underdog in Oxford against Ole Miss on Saturday.
Impressive performance, and also Stoops as a dog really came to play. And how about the way that game ended?
No doubt.
You fumble on the goal line, it bounces right to your guy, you leap into the end zone, and away you walk with a victory, which was really impressive, because what we got out of Ole Miss, we knew their offense was fantastic over the first couple games. What were they really tested? The one thing we know now is Kentucky's got a pretty good defense here, and that should hold up in the SEC. But again, Ben, doesn't it feel like the same point we're going to continue to make at the Grove in Oxford? You just lost that game. Don't show up the rest of the year, fans. Why? It's over. You can't make the college football playoff. Why even play football anymore? Ole Miss has a chance now to respond and still make the college football playoff. That's why this is sensational. You enjoyed that game for Ole Miss. You cheered your brains out if you were in the stands with the fans here. You lost that game, and you wake up on Sunday morning going like, you know what? Lane Kiffin can still stand in front of that team and go, guys, our mission is still here. Still win the SEC. We can still win a national championship. We can still make the college football playoff. That's great. Now, Ole Miss is going to need to have a big rebound, because you would have told me that Ole Miss lost that game 41-40. Say, oh, okay, back at the Ole Miss ways here, scoring, they just couldn't hold up. But the fact they only scored 17 points in that game, and their defense play was quality, only giving up 20 points there. There's still a lot to be won here for Ole Miss. Even though they lost a game in September, it happens.
Yeah, Ole Miss was the best scoring offense and defense in the country entering Saturday. The defense was fine. They actually held Kentucky to only 93 yards on the ground. That's 2 yards per carry on the 47 attempts that the Cats had as a team. Brock Vandegrift, a guy with SEC experience, kind of, in his first ever SEC road start, was good. 243 and a touchdown. No turnovers. That was the key. That's how Kentucky pulled off the upset. Since the start of 2021, Kentucky now under Mark Stoops, 12-8 against the number as an underdog. A good underdog team on the road with whiteout energy in Happy Valley on Saturday night. The Illini do cover as a 17.5-point dog in one of our four ranked versus ranked games on Saturday's slate. But Penn State does roll, winning rather comfortably 21-7. We stay well under 47.5. DRS, when looking at this game, it felt correct to see Penn State as a lofty favorite. I thought they would win comfortably. I thought they would win by double digits. I thought the spread was too large in favor of the Nittany Lions. But where I really keyed on this game, some of the numbers that Illinois put up against Nebraska, defending the Huskers on the ground, were not really there the entirety of the year. And we saw that. Penn State, 44 carries as a team, and the two-headed monster of Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton, too much for Illinois defensively. Allen, 102 on the ground, a touchdown. Singleton, 94 rushing yards and a touchdown. Penn State wins a big one in State College, 21-7.
It's fantastic. Like, that's Big Ten football right there. And I love the way that Penn State, yes, they can beat up on like little schools here, drop 55 points, but it's nice to see them get into a top 20 battle and say, you know what? Let's have a quarterback out there that is efficient, doesn't make mistakes. Drew Aller, 15 of 21, 135, no touchdowns, no interceptions. That's fine, because you're right. You got a little case of that thunder and lightning in the backfield. 18 carries for Allen, 16 for Singleton, 102 and 94. Mm. Each one of those guys scored a touchdown. When that weather starts to change in Happy Valley and you got to take that attack on the road, you already know you have a good defense, it's great to know you can win football games like this, and you can win football games in a high-scoring affair. That's a nice win for the Penn State Nittany Lions, and I appreciate the way they did. No field goals in that game? Love to see it, man. Pound it. Pound it.
Yeah, they ran the football, and they ran it really well. Huge for Penn State offensively. Drew Aller plays clean football. First turnover of the year for Luke Altmyer on the other side for Illinois. He entered as one of 16 quarterbacks after 4 weeks that had thrown for double-digit touchdowns this year, but was the only of those 16 without a single interception. That changed on Saturday. Huge game for Notre Dame, DRS. Last year, it was a similar script. They were close against Ohio State. They looked optimistic. They survived in comeback fashion against Duke. They headed to Louisville as a 6.5-point favorite, trying to get their season back on track. They lost that game outright by nearly 2 touchdowns. This year, getting their season back on track after hammering Purdue, holding on against Miami of Ohio, after being upset by Northern Illinois. In South Bend, they needed a statement as a 6.5-point favorite against Louisville. They get that statement. They were up 24-14 at the break, 21-7 at the end of the opening quarter. They hold on when it matters most, 31-24. The Irish, a big victory and a cover at home under Marcus Freeman.
It's good to see Riley Leonard's back to what we think we were getting from him out of Duke, where it's like, you know, you don't have to be the best in the air, but just be efficient. 17 of 23 for 163 yards, 2 touchdowns and no interceptions, but he's so effective on the ground. It's crazy because he had 13 carries, 52 yards and a touchdown. Every game he has one rushing, and it just feels like, you know, he's going to get it. It's like, hold on, they're at the 13-yard line. He jukes like 6 or 7 guys, gets in the end zone. It's like, he doesn't even look that fast, and it doesn't look like his moves are even that good, but yet he's still elusive. That's what you want out of Notre Dame. And once again, Ben, what's the theme of today? Oh, look at that. 4-1 Notre Dame should never be able to get in with the loss to NIU. Sure. In any years past, they would be done. Here they are as probably a top 15 team, top 16 team now, looking for a chance to say, if we run the table, we have a legitimate chance where we might be able to make it in.
No doubt.
Football is great when you get second chances, isn't it, people? Yeah, it is.
I would think so. Marcus Freeman, 9-4 straight up against ranked foes. Really the story for him in South Bend, he has not been great as a home favorite. Now 6-7 against the spread. As long as Notre Dame is not playing a MAC team, they are a perfect 3-0, both straight up and ATS. Riley Leonard, 6 rushing touchdowns in the last 3 games for the Irish. He hasn't thrown for more than .165 this year, but did have 2 touchdown tosses on Saturday. The rest of the weekend in college football next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We'll show you the other Saturday scores from week number 5 and the final Saturday in September of this college football season. DRS, 4 ranked versus ranked matchups. We've brought you the results of 3 of the 4. Here's the fourth and final. A big game in Big 12 play in the Little Apple on Saturday between 2 top 25 foes, both looking to stay in Big 12 title contention. Kansas State does that, 42-20, the rout of Oklahoma State. Ollie Gordon II finally putting up some yardage on the ground, but that Cowboys defense is atrocious, and the Wildcats take advantage. DJ Giddens, Avery Johnson, and K-State win big, easily covering as a 5.5-point favorite at home against the Cowboys.
Smoked them there. It's going to be interesting to see who's going to actually come out of the Big 12 this year, because it's usually like, hey, maybe it's going to be Texas, maybe it's going to be Oklahoma, and there's a lot of turmoil there. It's like one team is going to have to grasp this here, and you could have thought it would be Oklahoma State. What, by the way, what happened to Oklahoma State's offense? Electric, ton of points, Ollie Gordon, just no longer. Like, this lost their mojo.
Yeah, they have. They are not the team that we expected them to be to ride that momentum into this new era. Speaking of the Big 12, Big 12 opener technically for Arizona, because that Kansas State game where they got housed on a Friday in the Little Apple did not count. They pull off the upset as an 8.5-point underdog against Utah. Cam Rising's college career in the last year and a half in Salt Lake will be studied. The fact the guy can't be out there is craziness. Arizona, a big one. They hold down Utah on the ground, less than 3 yards per carry. The Big 12 title race up in the air. You don't want to know the 3 unbeaten teams in Big 12 play all off to a 2-0 start? That would be BYU, avoiding what the odds makers expected to be a trap spot. With the sun shining in Waco, the Cougars win outright as a 3.5-point underdog. Texas Tech holds on for its second Big 12 victory. In Colorado, pulls off the upset against the UCF team that had the second best price to win the Big 12 entering this weekend. We thought they would be good through the air, and they were. The Buffs 48-21 against Central Florida on a muggy and humid day in Orlando. A big day for CU and a big statement victory for Deion Sanders and the Buffs.
Yeah, it is. It looks like they're headed probably to a bowl appearance this year if they continue to play football based on what we've seen from these results. Yep. Yes, did they get lucky on a Hail Mary? Still won that football game. Yes, they went on the road as double-digit dogs and won easily against a UCF team. Understandably, there was some, you know, extenuating circumstances where you might say, okay, UCF, a hurricane running through Florida. But no excuses when you're playing football in a clean field where you're the home team, you should have handled your business and didn't. Because Colorado, by the way, Ben, they were the better team. It wasn't a fluke upset of UCF. They pounded UCF. Good win for them.
Yeah, they certainly did. They looked like the better side. They held down the best rushing offense in the country. UCF, who was putting up 378 per game this year, limited the damage against the Knights on Saturday. Iowa State is also an unbeaten team, but just 1-0 in conference. They have the second best price to win the Big 12. K-State back to the favorite at 4-1. Michigan, thanks to maybe some favorable officiating on what was an onside kick that would have given the Gophers a shot to come back, holds on to win the Little Brown Jug 27-24. Minnesota, though, does cover as a 9.5-point underdog. Wisconsin has a lot of questions to answer in year number two under Luke Fickle. USC bounces back from the loss in Ann Arbor. They cover as a 14.5-point favorite at home. And Donnie, outside of Saturday, let's go to Friday. You mentioned Hard Rock Stadium being electric. We saw the lights. We saw the lights turned off. We saw a Hail Mary that was caught, that was ruled incomplete, that was ruled a touchdown by Virginia Tech, that on replay review, somehow they found the video evidence necessary to say it was an incomplete pass. Frankly, if you look at the video, I think it was the right call. But the process to get there was asinine. Regardless, Miami holds on to stay unbeaten 38-34 against the Hokies. Va Tech, though, does cover as a 17.5-point underdog.
It was a lot of fun to watch. Stayed up late on Friday to watch that one finish. It was an unbelievable ending. But here's the issue, right? Because there are a couple ways you can look at this. Technically, Virginia Tech did get robbed by the letter of the law. But sometimes here's what we always ask for. Do you remember that pass interference to get to the Super Bowl for the Rams going up against the Saints? Like, we knew what the answer was. But on the field, you can't go back and replay. That was a blown call by the officials. Right. I'm just glad the ACC as an organization must have been looking at that and had calls going in like, this never should have been called a touchdown on the field. Let's just do the right thing. Because yes, Virginia Tech is upset and they should be, because the ref on the field easily should have just walked over with us. I don't know what happened, but that ball's loose and Miami has it. Let's call it incomplete and let's just see if he goes and gets it. The fact they called that a touchdown on the field was so egregious where I tweeted out, faith in humanity has been restored. That was the right call, but the wrong process.
Very wrong process. MLB playoff picture next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So up until about a week ago, originally we would have been here on this Monday to start off a new week, and we would have said the Major League Baseball regular season is over, day off today to set the stage for the opening of the wild card round tomorrow. All four sets, the best of three, to begin the expanded Major League Baseball playoffs about to begin. But of course, we had the rainout and the postponement based on the effects of Hurricane Helene in Atlanta. So the Braves and Mets scheduled for a doubleheader. Would it even be necessary? It, in fact, is. We will get to the National League playoff picture. What is at stake? What remains? The outcomes and the clinching scenarios on this Monday. But DRS, the American League, is set. Here is the postseason picture in the AL. The Guardians only played 161 because they could not catch the Yankees. New York will be the top overall seed in the American League playoff picture. Cleveland also that opening round bye. The Astros clinching the American League West about a week and a half ago. The Orioles sweeping the Twins to end out this weekend. Despite Baltimore not really needing the series, they a large cushion for that top overall wild card, and because of the Twins slide to end out the year and the hot play out of Detroit, it's going to be the Royals and the Tigers in the final two American League wild card spots. Detroit did drop its final two games of the year after beating the White Sox on Friday to make history in Major League Baseball. The White Sox now officially the worst team we have ever seen in the modern era. 121 L's. That the most we have ever seen since the year 1900. So a little bit of reshuffling in terms of the AL Central teams into the postseason, but that's how it looks in the American League.
Yeah, it's fun to get new teams in, right? We didn't anticipate the Tigers making it in. Like to see that same thing with the Kansas City Royals. Played well down the stretch, or should I say almost the opposite. Detroit was awesome down the stretch, and Kansas City sort of backed their way in, but they still found their way in. And that's the thought process behind a 162-game season. Those games that you win early and middle of the season count just the same as those wins or losses late in September, so they got in. The interesting part's going to be game number one, Houston and Detroit. Probably going to be Framber Valdez taking on Tarik Skubal. Like, the total in that game is what, 3.5? For that game, that's going to be crazy to watch it play out. And that's the one scenario that I look at and say to myself, like, the Tigers aren't a great baseball team, but they do have the best pitcher in baseball in a short series. And if you're Houston, like, come on. Like, I understand the Royals are quiet. We couldn't get the Royals in this spot here. So that's going to be a series to watch right off the bat. But also keep in mind, the Dodgers are the number one overall seed in baseball. The Philadelphia Phillies are the two seed here. So I was watching that over the weekend to see if the Yankees might be able to claim it, or even the Guardians, who got that game rained out. So looking longer down the line, it'll be interesting how it plays out. But we always thought, at least I thought, the Yankees would be that top overall seed in the American League. They did get that.
Yeah, they did absolutely get that. They will enter this October as the American League pennant favorites. Of course, the Yanks have failed to win a pennant since their last American League pennant and their last World Series crown back in 2009. The Astros, who will host the Tigers and Tarik Skubal in this best of three wild card set, have reached the American League Championship Series each of the past 7 years. The Guardians, though, have that second best price with the opening round bye, and DRS, we are about to have the conversation based on the results now in the expanded postseason. This is the third year of the expanded playoffs and the additional wild card team in MLB. Rest versus rust, opening round buys, wild card teams needing to win game after game after game down the home stretch of the regular season. Can they carry the momentum now into the playoffs? 6.5, by the way, the total for tomorrow's opener in H-Town between Framber Valdez and Tarik Skubal. The Astros -178 to win the set. We will preview all of those games tomorrow. So now to the National League, where things are still interesting. The Dodgers are the number one seed. They had the best record in baseball, best record in the NL over the Phils, despite Philadelphia having the season series advantage. Only 10 cents, though, DRS, separate these two teams to win a National League pennant. The Brewers also winning the National League Central, not the opening round bye, finishing two games behind Philadelphia, +950. We do not know necessarily the wild card spot. San Diego will be the top team. They have already clinched that playoff berth. Here is what is at stake in the doubleheader today in Atlanta. It's the Braves and the Mets for two. The winner of game one will already guarantee their playoff berth. If the two teams split, the two National League East teams, New York and Atlanta, into the postseason. If the Mets sweep, it's the Mets in the Diamondbacks. On the opposite side, if the Braves sweep both of the two games today at home in the A, it's Atlanta and Arizona. DRS, still something to be determined on now the final day of this Major League Baseball regular season.
Yeah, Diamondbacks did this to themselves here. Oh, it's unfair. Like, no, you had 162 games to try to settle this, and you pull into this tie. So you look at the doubleheader. It's the worst-case scenario for the Diamondbacks, because you look at saying, I guess a team theoretically could sweep, but if one team wins game number one, whether it be the Mets or the Atlanta Braves, they have to play somebody. They're going to pitch their worst pitcher and their worst bullpen efforts and their worst lineup you can possibly have on that active roster, going up against another team that's going to be pressed up against it. Like, I believe, let's just say it's the Atlanta Braves. I think Schwellenbach is going to start game number one. If they lose that, you know who they go to? Chris Sale in game number two against probably a Mets tomato can, where they're going all in to win it. It's a tough scene here overall for the Diamondbacks because they're not going to get in, but that's the fruits of the labor over 162 where you left yourself to be watching a doubleheader to see how you can get in. But also keep in mind, it is sort of unfair, and I thought Major League Baseball played this terrible last week because you probably could have squeezed some of those games in knowing the weather was there, changed maybe a location or two, moved up a game, and maybe you didn't need this. But I think most of us were cheering on, outside of Braves fans and Mets fans, that we wanted to see a doubleheader on Monday just because the intrigue. But also keep in mind, you play a doubleheader today and get on a plane, you are playing in the next city tomorrow night back in playoff mode. So it is a distinct disadvantage for both of these teams. But once again, you'd rather get in than not get in. I think both of these teams will be taking flights out tonight, and both of those guys will be in the playoffs, not actually having a flight home like the Mets. Like, hey, season's over. Where are we getting those tee times at?
For sure. You're rolling, right? We know what 162 is in MLB. It's not unheard of like it might be in the NFL or even the NBA or the NHL to play back-to-back nights to start off the postseason. Now for Arizona, just want to say this. They lost five of their last seven games. They won 11-2 yesterday to even stay in playoff contention to avoid a sweep against a Padres team that watched the Dodgers clinch the NL West against them before entering this weekend. Arizona looks firmly at themselves. They were 26-8 following the All-Star break until August 25th. They were the hottest team in baseball. But from that point, DRS, from August 25th on, they were 75-56 at that moment. They were 14-17 down the stretch. They had a losing record in the final month plus of this MLB regular season. Now to the games today. Arizona is desperate for a team to win both. And the Atlanta Braves are at least favored to win game one. No game two odds out just yet. We're not sure who the starters are going to be. Spencer Schwellenbach gets the start for Atlanta. The Braves greater than $1.50 favorite at home against the New York Mets. And Tyler McGill gets the start for the Amazons. I'll just say this about Schwellenbach. Of course, out of Nebraska, so I like the kid. His first six starts, six starts into June, at the end of June, he was 1-4 with a 5.68 ERA. He actually won the opener against the Mets on Tuesday night. The Braves victorious 5-1. Schwellenbach has won his last three starts. He was 1-4 with a 5.61 ERA at the end of June. From that point, he is now 8-7 with a 3.47 ERA. He gets a huge honor to start today against McGill and the Mets at home.
Yeah, and by the way, both of these pitchers in pretty good form. You look at that last 60 days, Ben. You look at Schwellenbach, a 3.29 xFIP, but also Tyler McGill, 3.40. Here's the interesting part. Now, of course, people that like to bet Major League Baseball are going to watch this game and bet accordingly. It's very hard to predict, even on a total. The reason I say this, are you throwing your best bullpen guys in game number one, Ben, when you're down 4-2 in the seventh inning? Like, let's honestly think about that. Like, the chances of coming back would be slim, and in a regular season game, you absolutely would do that, but are you going to use your high leverage guys knowing that you probably need them in game number two? It's a wild atmosphere. It really is.
We'll have more of a breakdown of what's at stake later. Monday Night Football doubleheader next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A Monday night doubleheader to end out week four of this 2024 NFL season. Last week, we got two great games, at least on paper, where we might have needed the doubleheader because Washington and Cincinnati was exciting. Buffalo and Jacksonville was an absolute rout from the very start. Might be a similar thought tonight, DRS, with the two games at stake. The one that starts second in Detroit looks great. The Lions off to a 2-1 start. The Seattle Seahawks a surprising 3-0, but this by far the best team they have played all year. We'll look at the game in Detroit in just a moment. It's the second game of the night. It's the better game of the night on paper because the first one, oh boy, it might be a little bit tough. The Dolphins back at home with Snoop Hundley getting the start for Miami against Will Levis in the winless Tennessee Titans, who are 0-3. The Dolphins have dropped two straight, of course. The quarterback concerns, Skylar Thompson not going to play, Tua Tagovailoa on injured reserve. Total 37.5. Miami a 2.5 point home favorite. DRS, how do you handicap the opener of the two we have on Monday night?
You're supposed to be looking at this game coming into it, and let's just say the quarterbacks were getting better play to Will Levis and healthy on Tua Tagovailoa. You'd love the wide receivers. Like Waddle and Tyreek Hill would be able to go off against a probably he's still a decent defense. But on the other side, you know, the Calvin Ridleys of the world and the, you know, Hopkins of the world, they should be able to perform. But I'm actually looking at running backs tonight because both of these offenses aren't very good. And also questions on the defense as well, particularly on Miami's side. If you're looking at Devon Achane, he's going to be a lead dog tonight, getting news here that it looks like, you know, per a source from Tom Pelissero, that Raheem Mostert's probably not going to go tonight, which means Achane, it's going to all fall on him. His touchdown prop tonight, a minus 105. You probably figure he's getting at least 15 to 20 total touches. But my question's going to come from, you know, Boy Genius down there in Miami calling the plays. What do you have dialed up for us tonight? Because even though it was Skylar Thompson and we get it, you didn't involve Tyreek Hill. You didn't get creative to get Waddle the football, and you got hammered in that game. If that's what we're going to supposed to be like, hey, I can draw up and get anybody open. Like Kyle Shanahan has had some success outside of Brock Purdy's of the world and superstar quarterbacks and having Nick Mullins put up big games. Why can't we have the same thing out of Mike McDaniel at this point? And that's what I'm expecting, at least him to get creative. I'm probably going to fall down the rabbit hole and say, like, hey, sooner or later, Tennessee is going to win because I do think they technically still have better overall weapons and also a better overall defense than Miami, but it's hard to go down. The one thing I do know about Snoop Huntley, you're probably going to get an honest effort, which means, Ben, what? Buck 75, maybe in the air, make some plays with your legs. Just an ugly, ugly game tonight that you're hard-pressed to find me looking for a total to go to the over.
Yeah, you know, so to your point, we'll talk about, we'll do a triple option later on, our favorite side, total and prop for Monday Night Football. I'm looking at Boy Genius. We have seen some of Boy Genius's friends, like Matt LaFleur, Sean McVay, and Kyle Shanahan, all be good at designing schemes to benefit people where you did not expect them to be good offensively. So, Mike McDaniel, you want to be that offensive mastermind and guru? Make it work with Snoop Huntley tonight against a porous Tennessee team. The Titans' defense has not been bad. That we understand. But you want to be creative tonight. You better figure it out. Miami enters this game as the worst scoring offense in the National Football League. Miami last year, that was one of the five best scoring offenses in the league, is averaging 11 points per game. Tennessee's only averaging 16 points per game, and we'll talk about Will Levis in just a moment. I am intrigued, DRS, to see the Finns booked as a favorite. Are the Titans just that bad? They've been an underdog now in all three games this year. And not only do we have a winless team in Tennessee and a team that has dropped two straight in Miami, who we not expect a ton of this year now because of the quarterback concern around Tua Tagovailoa and elsewhere, we have a matchup of two of the three teams that have failed to cover a number so far this year. Both Tennessee and Miami, 0-3 ATS. The Texans, 0-3-1 against the spread so far this season. So Miami booked as the favorite. What should that tell us? Well, under Mike McDaniel, who took over the reins in South Florida to start 2022, Miami is 18-5 straight up as the favorite. They are 14-9 against the spread. They are 1-7 against the number as an underdog, dating back to the start of last year. But Donnie, when expected to win games from the odds makers, they do, and for whatever reason, the odds makers look at Snoop Huntley and the Dolphins tonight and say, hey, you should win what's going to be an ugly game.
It's basically just flipping the coin on home field advantage, and there's something to that at that point. But also, if you look at the Miami Dolphins schedule so far, with Tua game number one, 20 total points against Jacksonville, with and without in game number two against the Buffalo Bills, Tua Tagovailoa, 10 total points. Without Tua and your backup quarterback, 3 points against the Seattle Seahawks. So Snoop Huntley coming in and saying, okay, we're going to score 27 points, I just don't see it. So that's why I see that total 37. And also, if you're the Titans, desperate for a win, is this the night you say, hey, Will Levis, primetime football, get out there. We're going to let you throw 40 times. You're not going to do that because you know the Dolphins probably won't be able to, you know, sort of counterattack. So why not just go out and not make the mistakes, slow the game down and say, we'll rely on our wide receivers, our quarterback that's been there all year long, and our running game here to sort of have an impact. Because if I think overall the defenses, maybe a slight nod to the Tennessee Titans, but the offenses, I actually still have to give a slight nod to Tennessee, even though how bad Will Levis has been, just because it looks like they have their offense intact. Like the Miami Dolphins have been so bad on offense, like maybe the worst in the NFL through three games, because it used to be the Carolina Panthers. Carolina looks like a juggernaut compared to the Miami Dolphins offense right now, Ben.
Yeah, listen, and that's why I think that Mike McDaniel needs to prove a little something tonight. Everybody is dealt difficult blows in the NFL. You got to make it worth it. Will Levis to throw an interception tonight at minus 146 is probably my best bet of this game. Will Levis to turn the football over would be juiced at minus 2,000. He has accounted for multiple turnovers in all three games for the Titans. He has thrown multiple interceptions in two of the three. He is so bad, his new head coach, Brian Callahan, yelled at him last week, Will, what the F are you doing? For that reason, I can never back Tennessee. 196.5 is the passing yards prop for Levis tonight, a number he was well over a week ago, but I don't know how you have the confidence there. In fact, Donnie, this game is not great. Again, I need to see Mike McDaniel do something tonight to get at least three touchdowns on the board. It's the way I'm looking at this Dolphins game, just for a little bit of counter fun. In the first game of two, the second game of two, though, it's a good one in Detroit. We preview it next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The second game of our doubleheader on this Monday night is a good one. To the Motor City we go. The Lions, a home favorite against the undefeated Seattle Seahawks, off to a 3-0 start. Detroit, 2-1. 4.5-point spread now in favor of the Lions. Earlier in the week, 3 and a hook. Total 46.5. We'll talk about that in just a moment. How do you see the second game of the two on this Monday night in the Motor City playing out?
I think Detroit's the better overall team. Now, you might look at this and say, like, hey, Donnie, Seattle, one of those undefeated teams. But again, you have to take a look at who they played, where they played them, right, and who was available to play. I look at Seattle and say, yes, they're a quality football team. Geno Smith is having a good season. They have an elite trio of wide receivers. You know, Kenneth Walker III looks to come back tonight. So now you have that double-headed combo in the backfield. I do like their offense, and quite frankly, I like their defense. I just don't know how good they are, Ben, at this point. The one thing I do know about the Detroit Lions, that team has one of the best offensive line, if not the best in football. Great wide receivers, maybe the best 1-2 punch at running back in the NFL, and Jared Goff playing well, and they're at home, love their offensive coordinator. So I do agree that that line should be -4.5 and a total of 46.5 points. For me, I think the attack way, it really is going to probably lead through the running backs of Detroit. That's not saying that Detroit, like Amon-Ra St. Brown's not going to have a big night. He probably will. Jamison Williams on the outside. I understand that, but I do think this game is going to be won because Jahmyr Gibbs and Montgomery, I think both have a legitimate chance to score a touchdown tonight, and probably will. But for my money, I've liked Detroit from day number one. They're at home on Monday night. I think the price is right, because if I say to myself, Donnie, Detroit's going to win this game, I'm not saying like, ooh, I don't know how about how much. It's 4.5 to lay the 4.5. Now, this could be a complete game changer tonight. If Seattle walks in on Monday Night Football and beats Detroit on the road, I'm going to have to reevaluate my thoughts on Seattle, because the same way we talk about Minnesota, look at those wins for that they've stacked up. They're impressive. We don't have any impressive win from the Seahawks. They have played nothing but trash at quarterback so far. And Jared Goff, he ain't trash, Ben.
And Seattle is 2-0-1 against the spread so far this season, covering against the Denver Broncos 26-20. Pushing a number in overtime against the Patriots 23-20. Last week, they hammered Miami in the first game without Tua Tagovailoa against Skylar Thompson, and then Tim Boyle 24-3. But they allowed the Broncos, who won yesterday 10-9 over the Jets and 60 passing yards out of Bo Nix, to score 20, albeit that game was pretty much in control. The Patriots scored 20. I think the Lions win this game and win it comfortably. Again, it would completely change my evaluation of Seattle if they even cover the 4.5-point spread tonight in Detroit. Okay, maybe an actual playoff contender for the Seahawks, but under Mike McDonald, I don't actually think the defense has been all that great, slightly skewed by last week against Miami, where the Finns only scored 3. So I think you could look at Jared Goff, 240.5. Frankly, a number he has only gone over in the one loss this year for the Lions in that bad game against the Buccaneers. Jared Goff has thrown an interception in all three games so far for Detroit, two against the Bucks. That was the only game he did not throw a touchdown. Completely agree, Donnie. I think it's a big night for both David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs, as Ben Johnson has been getting both into the action. But I think it's a Detroit game tonight. The Lions in their two wins, they have been booked as a favorite in both. They have covered. They are 2-1 against the spread. They were 11-5 against the number as a favorite a season ago. They have been the NFL's best cover team since the start of 2022. I look at the Lions tonight making a statement at home in the Motor City.
Yeah, and also, Geno Smith probably should have a good night, because the way you attack Detroit, as we know, is through the air. You take a look at Metcalf, Smith and Jigba, and also Lockett. They should be able to eat tonight, but also one of those spotlights that we like to see every once in a while. The number one rated defensive end in the NFL, according to Pro Football Focus, is Aiden Hutchinson. The number one left offensive tackle in football, that's Charles Cross of Seattle. So that's going to be a fun matchup, and maybe who wins that could decide this battle. But for me, I do think we get points, two offenses that should be able to score. The only tough part is, again, as we stated, we just don't know how good the Seattle Seahawks are. At the end of this game, we'll have a good measuring stick. They win, and one of the few undefeated teams left in football, that's going to be really impressive. I just don't think that's going to happen. I think Detroit overall is the better team. They control the ground game. They're at home, and they handle their home field advantage.
Seattle well over in both of its first two games this year, allowing 20 under last week as Miami only put up three. The Lions, this is their shortest total of the season. Their first three were 50 or above. In fact, the Lions entered week four, one of eight teams under in all three games, and not just under, but under by an average margin of two touchdowns, 14 points per game. But those totals were north of 50. Tonight, 46.5. I do think we see some points on this Monday. Hour number three is up next.